My title of my presentation is the preliminary data analysis of the EcoHealthy Child Care Program checklist and Train the Trainer program. I have nothing to disclose. So these are the learning objectives. I'm not going to read them to you, but this is what you're going to learn about today. So chemical exposures in early childhood are critical because, especially for young children, because they're in such a state of rapid growth and development. According to the National Association of Child Care Resources and Referral Agencies, there are nearly 11 million children under the age of 5 in some form of child care. And the extended hours in child care are necessary because to accommodate parents' work schedules. And these extended hours lead to increased exposures to whatever chemicals, chemical hazards there might be in the daycare setting. Elevated levels of pesticides, bisphenol A or BPA, lead, flame retardants, PCBs, radon, and asthmogens such as VOCs and mold have all been detected in elevated levels. And these exposures have been linked with many health effects, such as childhood cancers, neurodevelopmental, and reproductive impacts, most of which are irreversible. Sorry, there we go, and say.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here with us towards the end of the day. So I just wanted to briefly let you know about this program and the organization that's helping to run the program that Rahm is going to be giving some data analysis on. The Children's Environmental Health Network is a national nonprofit. We're celebrating 20 years this year, which is pretty exciting as far as nonprofits go. Our basic but vital mission has always been to promote the safe and healthy environments of all children. So, of course, that means their built environment and certainly where they spend majority of their time. Our goals in promoting that mission have always been to promote sound core science peer-reviewed research, to then use that new found research to then educate and stimulate new stakeholders, to really build new advocates and champions, and to elevate public awareness into child protective policies. So around 2003, 2004, we began to conduct an analysis because we saw a serious gap in practice, and we realized that the child care setting was not really being addressed when it comes to environmental training and education. And unfortunately, our inkling was correct as we did a huge phone assessment across the country of Head Start, child care licensing, and child care providers. And regardless of where they were in the country, they all said, we need this information. We don't receive this information in our standard health and safety trainings. So what's now called our National EcoHealthy Child Care Program was launched in 2010 officially. This works to make sure that the early learning environments are as safe and healthy as they can be based on the science that we know. So we partner with child care professionals to eliminate and or reduce known environmental hazards that Robin just mentioned in their facilities. And we have many low to no cost recommendations, again, science-based, that we offer to them, understanding that they don't have thousands of dollars to make huge remediations. And these are realistic, again, recommendations being made. So we provide a pretty intensive, comprehensive four-hour training, technical assistance when asked for. There's an endorsement process here for any child care in the country. We even have some centers outside of the country that want to become part of this. And we also provide a wide variety of free resources, some of which are back on the back table. And I'm happy to answer any questions afterwards, and certainly we'll direct you to our website, cehn.org, to find more information out about the program.
Okay, so the specific aims of this study were to identify the frequency of environmental stewardship practices, evaluate the effectiveness of the four-hour training, generate hypothesis for future investigation, and to validate the positive aspects of the training and provide information for mid-course corrections. The methods were, this is a secondary data analysis for the checklist. It's a 30-item self-report checklist focusing on stewardship in several areas, including pesticides, air quality, household chemicals, heavy metals, and such. The data were those submitted for endorsement from August of 08 to November 11. And for the Train the Trainer, the training consists of a four-hour class on environmental hazards in child care facilities, and it also includes a 20-item pre-post test to assess knowledge before and after the training. It's based on the 2011 data. It from five states, and we broke those five states down into three different regulatory levels. We also broke the data down into two subscores, behavioral and policy. The data were analyzed using descriptive analyses, including frequencies and proportions, and chi-squared to compare the old and new versions of the checklists. For the trainer data, we used a dependent sample t-test and ANOVA and linear mixed models to account for the effect. So we found there were 396 facilities in three countries. The size was 3 children to 391 children, and the majority had the positive responses were greater than 80%, and 80% was the cutoff for endorsement. Although we found a lot of positives, there were some areas that we discovered that could be used some more education and technical assistance. For example, 30% said answered no. Remember, these were all stewardship, so you had to answer yes in order to meet the criteria for endorsement. And so no means that they did have wall-to-wall carpeting. They did not have radon tests, and about 20% said they had soft plastic toys. They used 20% also said that they used scented air or scented candles or air fresheners, and the same percentage about for aerosols. And so we'll talk about that a little bit later. For the train-the-trainer data, there were 93 participants in 5 states, and there was no state-level regulatory oversight effect on the pretests. The policy subscore items had the fewest correct on pretest and showed the littlest improvement, and I'll discuss the significance of that in a minute. So you see here that the overall pretest to post-test significantly improved, and I'll talk about the two subscores in a minute. So the recommendations for the checklist. Since exposures to chemicals in early childhood can have serious effects on and have lifelong implications, ensuring that the child care facilities are as healthy and environmentally safe as possible is a priority. This analysis revealed several recommendations for both the checklist and the training session. First and foremost is the facility should be congratulated on what they're already doing well and encouraged to continue those health protective actions. But like I said, there's some areas that can use a little bit more education. The wall-to-wall carpeting could be a problem because dust and dirt is trapped, and those could be triggers for asthma. And about 25% said they hadn't been adequately tested for radon. But there's support programs available to on guidance to set up and have the tests run. And so there are resources available for that. Baby bottles, safe baby bottles, meaning they don't have BPA, could easily be changed with proper education on why this is important. Recycling was an identified area that was needed, and a recycling program is very simple in most cases to set up, but sometimes in isolated cases that there's been factors beyond the provider's control that prevented them from setting it up. But everything else is just a matter of retraining. And also the staff could be recommending to parents to send reusable items for lunch, such as thermoses and reusable lunch boxes instead of paper bags and drink boxes. And the air fresheners and aerosols too, this is just a retraining effort on why this is important. Overall, child care directors, facility managers, and providers are encouraged to carefully review and assess all products that are brought into their facilities as a step towards reducing exposure. And all education aimed at changing behavior should also be accompanied by safer alternatives. So for the train-the-trainer data, we found that the training works. It significantly improved knowledge from the pretest to the post-test. But it is, we found that it was needed by all, regardless of the regulatory category that we had them placed in. It did not show a difference on the pretests between the highly regulated, the moderately regulated, and the lowest regulation states. Especially with the policy items, they showed the highest percent of incorrect on the pretest and little subsequent improvement on the post-test. This suggests that information pertaining to the environmental health policy questions is quite complex and needs further elucidation. And these are some examples of the policy subscale that we think could be explained more in the training. So, of course, with any study, there are limitations. For both the checklist and the training, the participants were self-selected, which could result in bias the results towards the positive side. Either they were already doing these things at their centers with the checklist, or they were eager to learn from the four-hour training. And confounders, of course, there could be other things that weren't measured in the checklist or the training measurement tools that could impact the results of the analysis. And since the checklist and training were at one point in time, we need longitudinal follow-up to see if the changes in knowledge are sustained and knowledge encouraged behavior change and action. And I'd like to acknowledge the funding for this program came from University of Maryland School of Nursing DRIF Fund, the Children's Environmental Health Network for sharing their data so willingly, Katie McElroy, a PhD student who did most of the work, and Dr. Erica Friedman and Hee-Suk Sun, who are my research advisor and statistician consult. There's my contact information. There's a very busy slide with references, but and any questions? Yes. Copper chromated arsenate. It's the what used to be used on pressure-treated wood for playground equipment, and it's arsenic is a carcinogen. Well, we have several hypotheses as why that might have occurred, but in the highly regulated states, they may have not felt the need to know about it because they were already required to do it, and so that might be one possibility. But it also could be that how we broke down the subscales may have been not entirely correct, so we don't know if that was truly capturing the policy implications.
And Lee, what we are finding is that trials are like something happens differently at every state level. There are definitely misperceptions of what's happening versus what's really regulatory and sometimes exaggerated on the plus side and sometimes exaggerated on the negative. So there's still a lot of work that needs to happen, even with current standards, because some of them are still not practicing what they're practicing what they think, because they're not necessarily reviewing these policies on a day-to-day basis.
One more.
So for changes in the program, do you just only evaluate their knowledge, or do you also evaluate their practices?
Well, just the knowledge. It's a strictly knowledge-based test. They take it before they have the training, and then they take it again afterwards.
So how do you know that even though they know they have this kind of knowledge, that how do you know if they actually practice those programs?
Well, that would be the next step and for further research.
But they also agree to pop up site visits when we're in the area, so we can give them 48-hour notice, and they agree to that when they become part of this program.
But the data sets were not linked at all. That was another issue that we hope to rectify soon.